Let's talk about a tax. A tax you are probably paying right now, but you won't find it on any government ledger. And your CFO, well, they probably haven't even flagged it in the quarterly report yet.
Or if they have, they've almost certainly mislabeled it. Probably just buried it in cost of goods sold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you are in manufacturing, and I mean specifically in this new high voltage heavy metal space, this tax is just silently bleeding your margins dry.
We call it the safety margin tax.
And it's such a perfect name for it.
It is, because it's a tax born entirely out of fear. It's an invisible line item that comes from a lack of trust in the process.
Right. Picture this. A design engineer sits down to write a spec for a new connector pin.
Yep.
And the physics, I mean the actual Ohm's law requirements, say you need, let's say, 3 microns of silver to handle the conductivity and the heat.
That's all the part needs to function perfectly, 3 microns.
But that engineer, they hesitate. They've been burned before. They don't trust the plating process to be consistent.
They know from experience. If they ask for 3, the variance on that line might give them 2 in the critical contact zone.
And maybe 6 on the waste edges where it doesn't even matter.
But what do they do? It's a simple and, in their mind, rational choice.
They just key in 5 microns minimum.
Just to be safe.
5 microns.
Yeah.
When the physics, the actual engineering, only demands 3. Now, in a market where gold and silver prices are just hovering near historical highs, that isn't just some technical buffer.
No, that is financial suicide. It truly is.
And yet, for the last, 20 years, that was the only option you had.
It was the only rational option. You either overplated and just burned cash, or you risked a field failure.
Which could trigger a catastrophic recall.
Exactly. But the whole landscape has shifted. We're now looking at a reality where we can actually dismantle that old way of doing things.
We're talking about reclaiming that wasted margin.
And not just that. We're talking about hitting 0 failures in thermal shock testing. It's a whole new ballgame.
It is a bold promise, but I think the data we're going to talk about today really backs it up. So welcome to Reflections. I'm Oliver Watts.
And I'm Emma Rhodes.
Today we are really stripping down the plating process. We are looking at the very specific challenges facing engineers, supply chain managers, QA pros, everyone who is trying to navigate this massive transition to electrification.
The mission here is really quite simple. We want to help you streamline your precision manufacturing processes.
Right.
We want to show you how to slash those operational costs, specifically when it comes to precious metals, and maybe most importantly, how to hit those really aggressive sustainability targets for these mission-critical components.
Especially in the EV and renewable sectors, where the pressure is immense.
That's where it's all heading.
So, let's get into it. We have a massive amount of ground to cover. I want to start with the context, because context is everything here.
Yeah.
We are in February 2026, and the electronics world looks very, very different than it did even 5, let alone 10 years ago. What is the macro trend that's driving all of this?
It's something we've been calling the fundamental inversion.
Okay.
If you look back at the last 2 decades, let's just say from 2005 to 2025, the entire driving force of the electronics industry was miniaturization.
The IT boom. The smartphone era.
Exactly. Everything was about making things smaller, lighter, thinner. We got incredibly, incredibly efficient at handling these, you know, paper-thin foils and microscopic components.
Thin was in. That was the mantra, right? We were optimizing for density, not raw power.
Density, exactly. How many transistors can you cram into a device that fits in your pocket?
Right.
But now, the whole vector has completely flipped. It's inverted. We're in the era of electrification and renewables. And there's a basic physics problem you just can't get around.
And that is?
Electrons moving at the scale of an electric vehicle or a solar grid, they have mass. They generate a significant amount of heat. You simply cannot run an EV powertrain on the same thin coils that run your iPhone. It's impossible.
But we've hit a wall.
We have hit a physical wall.
So let's define that wall. When you say thick, what are we actually talking about in terms of material specs? Because thick is a relative term, right?
It is, yeah.
To a bridge builder, it's nothing. To a chip designer, it's a mountain.
It is a mountain in our world. We are talking about the big shift to 800-volt architectures in EVs.
Okay.
To move that kind of power safely and to do it efficiently, you need robust, heavy-gauge copper. So we're seeing specs move from those paper-thin foils to thicknesses of, say, 0.0020 inches up to 0.060 inches.
And a metric for our listeners.
That's around 0.5 millimeters to 1.5 millimeters.
Which, again, to a layperson, sounds like a fraction of an inch.
Yeah.
But in the world of reel-to-reel manufacturing, that isn't just a small bump in size.
No.
That is a completely different material class.
It's the difference between handling, say, a delicate ribbon and trying to handle a steel girder. And that right there, that's where the bottleneck happens. The legacy infrastructure, the plating lines that literally built the smartphone era, they just cannot handle this material.
Okay, so walk me through the failure mode. I want to really visualize this. You've got a factory floor. It's full of equipment designed for these delicate electronics.
Mm-hmm.
Then the contract comes in for a big EV bus bar. You try to feed this heady gauge copper into the line. What actually happens on the floor?
Well, first, you get catastrophic mechanical failure.
Okay.
It starts with just the sheer mass.
Mm.
A standard reel of thin stock, the stuff we're used to, might weigh 200 pounds.
Manageable.
Right. You can move that around with a standard lift. The machine's motors can pull it pretty easily. But a reel of this, say, 0.040-inch copper stock, that can weigh 2,000 pounds.
A ton. You're talking about a literal ton of metal.
A ton of metal. And your standard reel-to-reel line, it's just not built for that kind of torque. The drive motors, they just burn out trying to pull it. The transport mechanisms, the little sprockets and guides, they literally buckle under the load.
Wow.
But, you know, even worse than the weight is the rigidity of it.
The stiffness.
The stiffness of the metal itself. Yeah. This thick copper, it has what we call memory or coil set.
It wants to stay coiled.
It wants to stay in the coiled shape it was stored in. So when you try to force it flat through a delicate plating cell, it fights you. It acts like a giant spring.
And it jams the equipment.
Jams it hard.
And let's be really clear about what a jam means on a plating line. This isn't like a paper jam in your office photocopier where you just pull it out and hit restart.
Oh, not at all, no. When a plating line stops, that metal is sitting in active and often very aggressive chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
If it sits there for even a minute too long, the acid starts eating into the base metal or the plating itself burns. You have to scrap the material. Sometimes you have to drain the entire chemistry bath, clean out the cells. It's a production manager's absolute worst nightmare.
Okay, so the mechanical constraints they're pretty obvious. They're brutal. But let's just say, hypothetically, you manage to muscle the metal through the line. You don't break the machine. You install bigger motors, you just brute force it.
Right.
You still run into the second problem, which is electrochemical. You mentioned dog boning in our pre-show notes.
Yes, dog boning. It's such a great visual term for a truly terrible result.
So paint that picture for us. What does it look like?
Okay, imagine you take a cross-section of a rectangular strip of copper after it's been plated. What you want, ideally, is a nice, flat, even layer of silver right across the top.
Like a perfectly frosted sheet cake.
Perfect analogy. You want uniform thickness from the left edge to the right edge.
Right.
But electricity doesn't naturally work that way. Electricity is, well, it's lazy. It always follows the path of least resistance.
Mm.
And in a plating bath, the current density, we call it J, concentrates at the sharpest points. The current just loves the edges of the strip. It's far easier for the silver ions in the solution to land there than it is for them to land in the middle.
So you end up with this huge buildup of metal on the corners.
A huge buildup. The ears of the bone, as some people call them. You get these thick blobs on the edges and then a very, very thin underplated layer in the center.
And that center, inevitably, is where the actual electrical contact happens in the final connector.
Precisely. The functional area, the part that actually does the work, is the middle. But to get that middle section to the engineer's spec of, say, 3 microns, you end up plating the edges to 9 or even 10 microns.
Wow.
You are literally throwing away nearly 70% of your precious metal just to satisfy the basic physics of the edge effect.
That is the safety margin tax in action right there.
Oh.
You're paying for silver that either ends up on the scrap heap or just sits uselessly on the edge of a part.
That's it. So you see the problem. The reel-to-reel lines are either jamming or they're wasting a fortune in metal. So what's the industry's default reaction to this?
I assume they don't just give up.
They don't give up. They retreat. They go back to the old way. They switch over to batch plating, specifically what we call rack and barrel plating.
Walk us through why that's a trap. Because intuitively, on the surface, it makes some sense. If the reel is too heavy and stiff, why not just chop the metal into individual parts and then plate them?
The logic seems sound, at least mechanically. If you stamp the parts first, you can just throw them in a big rotating barrel and plate them loose. No tension, no heavy coils to deal with.
Simple.
But it introduces 3 new problems that are, I would argue, even worse for your bottom line.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first one is selectivity, or a complete lack of it.
Right.
In a barrel, you can't mask anything. You're just dipping the entire part into the gold or silver solution. You plate the whole thing.
Even the handle. Even the parts of the terminal that are going to be completely encased in plastic injection molding later.
Every single square millimeter gets plated. So if you have a large terminal where only the very tip, maybe 10% of the surface area actually needs to conduct electricity,
you're still plating 100% of it.
You're plating 100%. Yeah. Again, we're back to financial suicide.
Yeah.
You are paying for gold on parts of the connector that no one will ever see or use.
So you trade the mechanical difficulty for massive material waste.
Hmm.
Okay. What about the quality of the plating itself?
That's the second trap. It's what we call the bell curve of variance.
Okay.
When you have thousands of individual parts all tumbling around in a barrel, they don't all get the same exposure to the current. It's random. Some parts are buried deep in the middle of the pile. Others are on the outside getting all the attention.
So you get a statistical distribution of the plating thickness.
A very, very wide distribution. A big, fat bell curve. So if that engineer needs a minimum of 3 microns on every single part, and your process has a standard deviation of 1 micron,
mm-hmm.
the operator has to target an average thickness of maybe 6 or 7 microns just to make absolutely sure that the runts of the litter, the ones buried in the middle, don't fall below that 3 micron minimum.
So you're overplating the vast majority of the batch just to save a few outliers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
More waste. And finally, and this one is critical for high voltage applications.
I can guess. Tumbling a bunch of heavy copper parts together can't be gentle.
It's a mosh pit for heavy metal. I mean, these are 0.040 inch thick, often sharp stamped components. When they tumble, they impact each other, they ding each other, they scratch each other.
And in consumer electronics, maybe a scratch is just a cosmetic issue.
Maybe. But in an 800 volt EV system, a scratch on a critical mating surface is a potential hotspot.
It alters the resistance right at that point.
It creates an arcing risk. It is a potential fire hazard. You simply cannot have handling damage on high voltage mating surfaces, period.
Yeah. So, okay, we have a really clear dilemma here. This new high voltage world demands thick, heavy metal.
Yep.
The legacy continuous plating lines, they just break under the weight or they waste metal.
Right.
And the old school batch processing methods, they waste even more money and they damage the parts.
It's a classic rock and a hard place scenario. And it's exactly why so many manufacturers are struggling to bid competitively on these new programs right now.
Okay, let's hit the reset button for a second. If you're just joining us or maybe you're multitasking in the lab, here is what you really need to take away from this first part.
Okay, reset number one. First, the big shift to 800-volt architectures in EVs and renewables has created a huge demand for thick, heavy-gauge copper. We're talking up to 1.5 millimeters thick.
And this has created a physical wall.
A physical wall that traditional consumer electronics plating lines just cannot climb. They jam, they break, or they fail to plate evenly because of things like dog boning.
And second takeaway. The industry's default reaction, which is retreating to rack and barrel plating, is costing you a fortune.
It is. It's too slow. It causes impact damage, which is a quality risk. And because you can't plate selectively, you are wasting massive amounts of gold and silver. That is the safety margin tax we started with.
But there is a way out of this dilemma.
There is. And it involves rethinking the entire physics of the production line from the ground up.
This brings us perfectly into chapter two. We're going to examine a methodology called renewable thicker gauge, or RTG. Now, this is a proprietary approach from Precious Plate, but I want to treat it as a case study for how the entire industry really needs to evolve.
I like that approach, and I like that they describe it not just as a product spec, but as a manufacturing philosophy. The term they use is rugged precision.
Rugged precision. It sounds a bit like a truck commercial, but honestly, it fits perfectly here.
It really does. It's this core idea that you need the brute strength, the ruggedness, to handle the heavy metal, but you also need the finesse, the precision, to do the microplating correctly.
And it breaks down into two main pillars, right?
Right. Pillar one is the mechanics, and pillar two is the chemistry. Or, as I like to think of it, operational excellence meets financial optimization.
I like that. So let's start with the heavy lifting, the mechanics. We established that these 2,000-pound coils just crush standard machines. How does an RTG-style system solve that fundamental problem?
It starts with an engineering concept they call floating transport.
Floating transport.
Sure.
Okay. Is that magnetic levitation? Because that would be cool.
That would be very cool. But no, not quite. It's actually some really clever mechanical engineering. Remember how we talked about coil set? the memory that the metal has.
Right. The metal wants to stay curled up like a spring.
The RTG system uses a tension leveling entry zone to combat that. But here's the key difference. Instead of just yanking on the metal to pull it through the line, it uses these specialized catenary loop controls.
Catenary loop. Okay, break that down.
Essentially, they create these deep U-shaped loops of slack in the metal strip that are monitored by laser sensors. This completely decouples the heavy brute force unspooling process at the beginning of the line from the delicate plating process in the middle.
So the plating cell, the part where all the important chemistry happens,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't feel the full weight and pull of that one-ton coil.
Exactly. It completely isolates the tension. The uncoiler does the heavy work of pulling the mass and creating a slack loop, and then the plating line just gently and with very low tension pulls from that slack.
That's smart.
It is. And they also use much larger diameter capstans and non-contact guides. It all works together to allow the metal to flow through the machine without that stop-and-go jerking motion that causes all the jams.
It sounds like it would require a lot of careful calibration, though. It's not something you just turn on and walk away from.
It does, and this is where the craft part of it comes in. The documentation talks about the intuition required by the operators. You have to apply just enough tension to straighten the strip so it's perfectly flat for the chemistry.
But not so much tension that you work hard in it.
Exactly. Or stretch the metal. Mm-hmm. Because if you stretch copper, you fundamentally change its grain structure and its electrical properties. It's a real balancing act. It's a feeling. It's knowing the material.
And the result of getting this floating transport system right.
They're seeing a 40% increase in effective throughput, which is huge. You aren't stopping every hour to clear a jam. The line just runs and runs.
Okay, so we've got the metal moving smoothly through the machine. That's step one. A huge step. Now we have to actually plate it. And we have to solve that dog boning problem we talked about, that pesky physics of the edge effect.
Right. This is pillar two, the chemistry. And frankly, this is where it gets really interesting for the finance team, because this is where the money is saved.
Okay.
The solution here involves two main technologies. Conformal anode technology and dynamic masking.
Let's break those down. Conformal anodes. Conformal implies it conforms to a shape.
It does. So, physics time again. Remember how we said the current follows the path of least resistance and crowds the edges?
Yeah, the ions all rush to the corners.
To fight that, the RTG system uses what the industry sometimes calls robbers or shields. These are non-conductive barriers, usually made of plastic or some composite material, that are placed just millimeters from the edge of the strip inside the plating bath.
Why are they called robbers?
It's an old electroplating term. Originally, you might put a piece of scrap metal there to literally rob the excess current away from the part. But in this modern, more precise context, it's more about shielding.
So they block the line of sight for the ions.
You've got it. By placing these shields there, you physically force the ions to bypass the easy path to the edges and travel further toward the center of the strip.
You're essentially sculpting the electric field in the tank.
That is the perfect way to put it. You are flattening the curve of the electric field, which is notated as E, to homogenize the current density, J. So instead of that U-shape where the edges are plated really high and the center is low,
you get a flat line.
You get a nice, flat, even line right across the profile of the part. Which means if you need 3 microns in the center, you plate 3 microns in the center and maybe 3.1 on the edges, not 9 or 10. You eliminate that huge mountain of waste metal.
Now, the white paper we looked at mentioned a very specific financial impact here. Put a number on that for us.
It's significant. On a standard run of, say, 1 million terminals, just flattening that thickness distribution, can save upwards of $200,000 in silver annually.
$200,000?
Just in silver.
Yeah.
That is purely from not overplating the edges of the parts.
That pays for a lot of engineering time. And that's just the savings on silver.
Right. That's before we even get to talking about gold with spot plating. Because this is a reel-to-reel process, you can use dynamic masking to plate only the specific functional contact tip.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to dipping the whole thing in a barrel, you can reduce your gold usage by up to 90%.
90%. That just completely changes the landed cost of the component.
Completely.
But there's one more piece to this chemistry puzzle I want to touch on, and that's speed. Because thick metal needs more metal deposited on it.
Hmm.
And that takes time.
Usually, yes. In a standard process, if you just dip it in a tank, you are limited by how fast the metal ions can move through the liquid to the part. We call it the boundary layer. And if you try to just crank up the current to go faster, You deplete the ions near the surface and you burn the metal. It gets powdery and dark and it's no good.
So how does RTG speed that up without burning the plating?
The answer is impingement agitation.
Sounds aggressive.
It is. Instead of a still bath, they fire high-pressure jets of the electrolyte perpendicular to the strip as it moves through the cell.
Like a power washer.
Exactly, like a power washer, but with a silver or gold solution.
And what does that jet physically accomplish?
It just shatters that boundary layer. It constantly forces fresh, metal-rich liquid right up against the surface of the copper. This allows them to run at incredibly high current densities, up to 200 amps per square foot, or ASF.
Okay, give us a benchmark. What's a standard speed?
A standard rack plating process for silver is usually somewhere between 40 to 60 ASF.
So we are talking 3 to 4 times the speed.
3 to 4 times the speed without burning. So you get high speed, high quality, and low waste all at the same time.
Okay, let's hit the reset again. That was a lot of technical detail, but it's so crucial to understanding why this new approach actually works.
Right. Reset number two.
Takeaway number one from this section. The renewable thicker gauge, or RTG methodology, uses a floating transport system. This isolates the tension from the heavy coil, allowing these 2,000-pound coils to move through the line without jamming or stretching the metal.
It turns a wrestling match into a ballet.
Perfect. And takeaway two, it conquers the physics of the edge effect. By using conformal anodes, or shields, and impingement agitation, the jets, they can plate evenly across the entire width of the strip at extremely high speeds.
And this creates that flat thickness profile, saving roughly 30% in material costs just on its own.
And up to 90% if you're switching from barrel plating to selective spot plating.
Which is a game changer.
So we've proved it works mechanically, we've proved it works financially, but the big question remains, does it work in the field? Because if I'm an engineer at a major EV company, my single biggest fear is a recall. I need to know this stuff sticks.
And this brings us right to chapter 3, strategic resilience and validation, because you are absolutely right. You can save all the money in the world on plating, but if that connector fails in a car going 70 miles an hour on the highway, your company is done.
The white paper highlights some pretty specific testing standards. But before we get to the tests, talk to me about the metallurgy itself. It's not just about putting silver on copper. It's about what kind of silver you're putting on there.
Correct. For these EV connectors, the silver needs to be hard enough to resist wear because these things vibrate constantly on the road for years. But it also needs to be soft enough to maintain very low contact resistance.
It's a paradox, right? Hard things are usually brittle and soft things are usually conductive.
It's a real paradox. And they manage that balance by using organic grain refiners in the chemistry itself.
Okay.
These are proprietary additives that control how the silver crystals actually grow at a microscopic level. It creates a very specific dense grain structure that meets ASTM B700 standards. So you get a deposit that is hard and dense, but still ductile enough not to crack.
And the proof, as they say, is in the pudding. Or in this case, the testing.
The proof is in the thermal shock testing, specifically the USC CSIR 2 standards.
Which is the torture test for automotive components.
It is the torture test. They take these parts, they heat them up to 175 degrees Celsius, then they immediately freeze them down to negative 40 C over and over and over again. The expansion and contraction from those temperature swings tries to just rip the plating right off the base metal.
And the result for the RTG process?
Zero failures.
Zero. That's a very confident number.
It is. And to back that up statistically, not just anecdotally, let's talk CPK.
The Process Capability Index. For those who aren't in QA, what does that tell us?
It tells you how repeatable and reliable your process is. A CPK of less than 1.0 means your process is not capable. It means you are producing defects. You're basically gambling.
Okay.
The industry standard rack plating process, because of that wide bell curve of variance we talked about, usually sits at a CPK of around 0.85.
So statistically unreliable. You will have bad parts coming off that line.
Inevitably. The RTG process, on the other hand, clocked in at a CPK of 1.67.
1.67. That's approaching Six Sigma territory.
It is. It means the precision you get isn't an accident. It means it happens every single time, part after part, reel after reel. That is what allows an engineer to spec 3 microns, get 3 microns, and sleep at night.
I want to circle back to the renewable part of the name -RTG. We've talked about how this process serves the renewable market. But is the process itself sustainable?
That's a key differentiator here. It's not just about making parts for green energy. It's about making them greenly.
Right.
The selectivity is the biggest factor, obviously. Using less precious metal means less mining, less refining, less chemical usage upstream. But there's also the circular economy aspect of it.
The ability to replate parts.
Yes. High-value heavy copper components are expensive to stamp and to source. If a part is rejected in QA or comes back from the field, this kind of line architecture is capable of stripping the old plating off and replating them. You don't have to scrap the valuable copper substrate.
And longevity. We're not building smartphones that get thrown away in 2 years.
No, we are building infrastructure that needs to last for decades. They integrate a passivation and sealing stage right into the line. This is designed for 15 to 20 year lifespans in the harshest environments.
So we're talking about components that sit in solar fields in the Nevada desert.
Or offshore wind farms in the North Sea. They need to last.
Okay, so let me put my business hat on for a second here. What this all boils down to is total landed cost.
This is the argument for the supply chain manager and the CFO. There is a very real cost of inaction. If you stick with the old way, you are absorbing that safety margin tax every day. You are paying for waste.
Meanwhile, your competitor, who has already switched to an RTG-style process.
They're coming to the table with a bid that's based on 30% lower material costs right out of the gate. And they are promising higher reliability and a SICK PK of 1.67.
They're going to win the bid.
They're going to win the bid. It's really that simple. Plus, being compliant with standards like LV214 and US CAR makes you a tier one ready supplier immediately, which opens up a lot of doors.
It really seems like the choice is becoming pretty binary. You either evolve your process or you become obsolete.
It really is. The infrastructure that built the smartphone era simply cannot build the clean energy era. We just have to accept that fundamental truth and adapt.
There was a great line in the notes. It's a fusion of intuition and calculation. I love that.
It's where the heavy lifting of old school industry meets the precision of modern intellect. It's the perfect summary.
So what does this all mean for you, for the person listening right now? If you're sitting on a design for a new heavy gauge component, or if you're managing a line that is struggling with jams and high variance, you have a decision to make.
You have to stop letting plating inefficiencies anchor your growth. That really is the bottom line. You don't have to accept the waste as a cost of doing business anymore.
And we want to leave you with some very specific actionable steps, because this is Reflections, and we believe in action, not just talk.
First, if you're in the design phase, don't wait until you've already cut the steel for your stamping die to think about plating. Join the email list for the heavy gauge design checklist. Optimize your stamped parts for continuous plating before you manufacture them. It will save you so much pain later.
Second, go to the source. Visit preciousplate.com. Look at the data. Read the case studies for yourself.
And honestly, the best thing you can do is just talk to a human who understands this physics. Pick up the phone. Call a surface finishing engineer at 716-283-0690.
That number again is 716-283-0690. Don't guess. Don't pay the safety margin tax for another quarter. Ask the experts.
The transition to electrification is happening right now. The only real question is whether your manufacturing process is going to be ready for it.
This has been Reflections. Let's get to work.
Let's get to work.